Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer. What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing is directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Woke Bros. Of course, I'm Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozni Lambre. As always, I'm joined by the sultry Spaniard, my boy, on the west side of Los Angeles, in sunny Santa Monica, where it's not, you know, Amistad heat over there.
Well, I'm actually in an undisclosed location. I'm not in L.A. right now. I'm in the bunker. Yeah, I'm in a bunker.
He's in an undisclosed location. Nando's relocated.
Yeah.
My boy has relocated. But Nando Vila, ladies and gentlemen, on today's show, we're going to talk about Donald Trump's executive order over the weekend mandating an extension of the unemployment benefits relief package. Really, it wasn't an order so much as a nod or, you know, when you sneeze and you go, hurry up and extend it. You know when people do that? That's what Donald Trump did over the weekend to the Republican Senate, the Republican-controlled Senate. Ilhan Omar, people thought that was going to be a hotly contested primary out in Minnesota. She laid the smackdown on the competition over there. We're going to get into that. But first, of course, the big news of the week. Joe Biden announces Kamala Harris as his running mate for his presidential campaign in November for the election.
Queen.
Yes, queen. Yes, absolutely a yes, queen moment. To get the important stuff out of the way first. This is historic for many reasons. Kamala Harris is the first woman of Asian descent, of Western African descent. And we don't want to get into the intricacies of this because people want to make the difference. The fact that her father is descendant of West African slaves who got dropped off in Jamaica rather than America. People want to make that distinction. For the purposes of this show, we're not. She's a black woman. She's also an Indian woman. It's historic for all of those reasons. She's a woman. She's black. She's Indian, East Asian. And she's the first of any of those kinds to be nominated vice president of these United States of America. Historic moment. And I think that's important. But honestly, Nando, for our purposes, for, you know, the dirty hippie commie socialist people that we are over here, this is kind of par for the course, right? Kamala Harris is definitional Democratic establishment person. She just checks every single box that, you know, gets the dicks hard, the vaginas wet of the people who run the Democratic Party, right? She had the right jobs. She went to the right schools. She ticks off all of the demographic boxes that we dad just literally just mentioned. So it's like, it's the neoliberal sort of ethos at its apex. It's like, yes, we did it all in one swoop. We got a chick. Yeah. We got somebody who worked at the DA's office. You know, we can bandy her about and say, look, we love Negroes. Look, we even love Asian people. Like, look at how great we are. The big tent party. And more importantly to those people, she is somebody who the money class loves. They love her so much. She moves effortlessly within those rooms. Nando actually shared with us a nice article in CNBC where anonymous people from within the money class were doing high fives and sort of twerking and tootsie rolling at the idea that Kamala was the pick here, because They love her over there. That, and that's important to the Democratic Party establishment. Like, as much as they like to be this fake ass for the people, you know, populist sort of working class allegedly party, they love nothing more than people who can cozy up to the donor class. Kamala Harris is great on the fundraising circuit, right? Because, like, you know, she is, by politician standards, very charismatic. She's an attractive person. Like, she's just perfect. She's just the perfect choice for where the party's going. And strategically, Nando, and I've tried to mention this over and over and over again, Joe Biden and his, you know, his campaign doubled down on cynicism, nothingness, do nothing, being unimaginative. You can't tell me what the unifying theme of this ticket is besides,
come on, man.
We're not Donald Trump.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. You don't want Donald Trump. You know, like, there's no unifying message. This is not Barry in 08 with the hope, with the, like, we're going to get health care to every single American. There's nothing unifying this ticket besides not Trump. They're not offering people anything besides some vague idea of federal government stability and not being a lunatic, which, fair enough, it won. You know what I'm saying? And picking Kamala Harris is basically a doubling down on those efforts. And to be fair, Nando, and I know I've been droning on for a minute here, to be fair, that shit worked and it won. Right? It won them the nomination. So the idea that they would do anything besides double down on the things that won them the nomination, which was, again, unimaginative. It's not like, oh, let's get more health care at cheaper rates for people. It's like, nah, let's just make Obamacare, just get back to whatever Obamacare was. That was great. It's just essentially status quo. America generally is fine for everybody. Maybe we need a couple of more black and women senators and Congress people and people on the boards of Google and Facebook. But, like, for the most part, it's fine. That's what they ran on. That's what they're doubling down on. And that's what this choice signals to me.
I find it remarkable that it's been just a couple months since George Floyd was killed on national TV, which ignited a social uprising that was really unprecedented in American history, comprised obviously overwhelmingly by the base, voter base of the Democratic Party. And that in this moment of just profound social unrest and social uprising, the nominal kind of left of center party in the United States, the Democratic Party, the party that is in theory of those people, chooses a tough on crime prosecutor as their VP nominee, right? I mean, it's a slap in the face. It's a declaration of intentions that they don't need us, that they don't want us, that they will, you know, cynically use the specter of the right to cow us into voting for them, and it's going to work. I mean, that's the sad reality of it. It's all going to work. You know, Kamala, at the end of the day, again, like you said, it's just a great way to reinforce the status quo while feigning some very superficial kind of progressive intent. But when the reality is the ruling class, like, absolutely loves her. I mean, it's the only kind of very, 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 very small silver lining in this whole thing is that it wasn't Susan Rice. Like, it wasn't someone worse. It wasn't someone way more ideologically committed like Susan Rice or Pete Buttigieg or some other awful person like Amy Klobuchar or whatever. Like, Kamala is slightly more cynical more of a weather vane than those people who are just, like, deeply committed ideologues. You know, she did, she did, in theory, support Medicare for All at the beginning of her presidency.
She trotted it out, and then the idea of abolishing private insurers.
She started, like, wiffle waffling, but it seemed clear that at the beginning of the campaign, she saw that that's where the energy was and kind of pivoted there, even if it was cynical or whatever, which means that she is, movable, if that makes sense, because the we've seen and history has proven, and recent history has proven even more overwhelmingly that the Veep choice of a if the president ends up winning, so like if Biden ends up winning, his Veep will be the standard bearer of the Democratic Party going forward. You know, she will be the next Democratic nominee for president if Biden wins, right? If Biden loses, she probably, you know, I mean, she'll try again, but she's not like a guaranteed shoo-in. If Biden wins, she will be the next Democratic nominee. So we have to get used to the idea of Kamala being in our lives for a long time, you know, and potentially becoming president, or at least running for president as the standard bearer of the Democratic Party. And in that sense, like, you know, there is a very, 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 very small silver lining in that she seems kind of willing to go with the energy in certain moments, whereas someone like Biden or someone like Hillary or someone like, you know, Susan Rice, Pelosi will just tell the activist base to like shut the fuck up and get on with it. Right. Again, it's dispiriting. I mean, the sort of candidate that had emerged in recent weeks as a sort of like olive branch to the left, but could also kind of play with the establishment, was Karen Bass from Los Angeles. She was absolutely murdered in the most cynical kind of political hack job way you can imagine, in that like they surfaced like some semi-nice comments she said about Fidel Castro after he died, saying like, you know, well, you know, I hope he rests in peace or some shit. And that she visited Cuba in 1973, and the Florida Democratic Party was like, this is going to cost us Florida. You know, we're going to, if they nominate this crazy commie, they're going to fucking cost us Florida. So they absolutely murdered her. They like circled the wagons against her, and they even tried to murder Kamala. I mean, some of the big wigs in the Democratic Party, Ed Rendell and these kind of fossil cretins that still run everything, and are very close to Joe Biden.
The idea that the party would be taking marching orders from Ed Rendell is like, it's definition of insanity. I get it, the PA and Delaware connection and whatever brotherhood. I get it on the surface level, but like substantively, Ed Rendell is a dinosaur, dude, a straight up fossil. And by the way, the type of cat who, can you name a place where he could win a Democratic primary? Like, he's done in Democratic politics as far as
Biden
viability.
Biden has revived his career 100%.
It's crazy, dude.
So yeah, Kamala, yes, queen, very exciting.
And you know, and look, it's important that we talk about, because this is the thing that's going to dominate the conversation for the next couple of weeks until we get into the stretch run of November, is sort of the mainstream media's discourse is going to be about the idea of her level of quote unquote liberalism. Right. They're going to be throwing that frisbee around. And you're going to hear some people, they're going to get smart enough people to go on there and be like, I mean, like, we're not talking about freaking Noam Chomsky here, guys. Like, we're talking about like a straight up establishment Dem. And, you know, I think the proof of this, the proof that she is purely establishment, is the New York Times described her as, quote, a pragmatic moderate.
This is how pragmatically like, moderate she is. When she was Attorney General of California, Steve Mnuchin, who at the time was the CEO of a company called One West, was committing widespread foreclosure fraud, literally taking mortgage contracts and whiting out the dates and backdating them and re-signing them to fraudulently foreclose upon homeowners in the financial crisis. It's like one of the most cartoon villain things you could do as a blood-sucking leech financial vampire. And the Kamala Attorney General's office, like the attorneys kind of like right below her, were building a case against him. They produced a 25-page memo outlining the widespread illegality and fraud of all of this that was going on, you know, in which they were making millions of dollars by foreclosing on people illegally. And it got up to Kamala's office, and these attorneys were hungry. They were ready to prosecute. They were ready to sue One West. They were ready to stop this catastrophe from ongoing. And Kamala quashed it. She refused to sue One West. She refused to prosecute Steve Mnuchin. Oh, and lo and behold, a few months later, a donation from Steve Mnuchin goes into her Senate campaign because that's what she was looking for from the AG's office. She was using it as a launching pad for her Senate career. And the donations of people like Steve Mnuchin were important to her. Steve Mnuchin, I remind everyone who is listening, is the current Secretary of the Treasury under Donald Trump. He is a cartoon villain. Like, you cannot find more villainous person in America than that man. Kamala ran pass blocking for her like a fucking for him like a left tackle, protecting the blind side of her quarterback. And yeah, so that signals to Wall Street, you know, she's gonna play ball.
She will play ball. Like, you
know, she'll play ball. She will play and, ball. And like some dumb libs will be like, oh my God, it's awesome that we have a WLC in the White House. You know, while the Wall Street people are just laughing all the way to the fucking bank. That makes me sick.
Yeah. It's, and you know, they're going to cite stuff like one study showed that she's the fourth most liberal voting member of the Senate, which people need to understand the context of that. The Senate is not the House. There is no AOC in the Senate. There is no Ilhan Omar in the Senate.
Well, there
Senate.
Is one. There's Bernie Sanders. But, that's the only one.
Right. There's one. There's one. There's Bernie freaking Sanders. And there's literally the rest of the Senate. Like, so the concept of being the quote unquote top 10 liberal senator, it's just extremely low. And again, you know, you're going to see it. I know just anecdotally on my timeline, fancy Negroes on Instagram are loving it. If you are, you know, somebody who went to an HBCU, joined a Divine Nine fraternity or sorority, this is like, my goodness, when I tell you a circle jerk is happening in those circles, it's happening. But at the same time, she got creamed in the primaries amongst younger black people by the Warrens and the Bernies.
Well, not the Warrens.
They just got creamed. Well,
just the Bernies. Warren did not do very well with right. black folks. She got like less than 1%.
Got creamed by that demographic of people. But again, older professional type of black people, you know, just the idea that you self-identify as a black person who's an achiever and up with the mobile bourgeoisie. Black person. The black bourgeoisie is going to eat this up with a fork and a knife. They are just going to love it. Somebody like me, I'm less gung-ho or happy about it. But again, as Nando mentioned at the top, this could have gone way worse. You know what I'm saying? Like, he could have picked straight up an Ed Rendell type. He could have been like straight up, yo, Joe Manchin, let's do it. You know, and that's, and again, that's what you're going to hear from the corporate media class. She's not a Joe Manchin. She's not a conservative Dem. She's barely moderate. They're going to say that she's center left, which again, the bar to be that in the completely corporatist Democratic Party establishment is extremely low. My normie ass girlfriend today or yesterday said she got an endorsement from Sean King.
Oh, yeah, I saw that,
and said it unironically. So that's all you need to know about how this is going to play with the normies. They're going to love it. It's just perfect for what they're about and what they stand for. Before we go, it's just, you know, again, I don't want to be this overly pessimistic and killing the pick and killing the ticket. But, you know, again, Nando sends over a tweet from 2019.
It's classic.
Where Let me just find this really quickly to read it for you guys. And it's just, it's everything you need to know about this person, everything you need to know about the party establishment. This is their ideology in a freaking nutshell. And the tweet goes, quote, it's from Kamala, 2019.
Tweeted by Kamala's account.
It's from Kamala Harris's Twitter account. Yesterday, I announced that as president, I'll establish a student loan debt forgiveness program for Pell Grant recipients. Great. This is starting off fantastic. Like, hell yeah. Let's get rid of the crippling student loan debt. Trillions of bucks of normal, you know, working class type of people or even slightly professional class type of people whose lives are being ruined by just crippling student loan debt. The tweet continues, for Pell Grant recipients who start a business that operates for 3 years in disadvantaged communities.
So what like, the fuck like 12 people in America about? Qualify for this thing.
Like, what are you talking about?
Like, literally
about?
12 like, people what? In America qualify for this, like, Rube Goldberg neoliberal nightmare policy, like, where you have to, like, fill out 25,000 forms, you know, to prove that you, like, opened up, like, a taco truck in the ghetto or something. Yeah.
It's just insanity. It's like, it's more of this, yo, the market solves every single need you ever had in the history of the world all the time. Like, it's just insane ideology, son. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, we can't just forgive student loan debt. We just can't do that. We can't just, you know, forgive student loan debt. Like, because that would just be immoral. That would just be messed up.
They see it as immoral. They see it as helping people out. They see it as fundamentally immoral. You see it with things like student debt. They say it creates a moral hazard, you know, and you see it now with even Democrats on this extension of the unemployment insurance. Many Democrats are even getting on board with the idea that unemployment insurance is immoral because it disincentivizes work. And it's like, guys, oh my God, like it's pure ideology, like, into your veins. Like, just get over it. You know, help people. People are suffering in this country. Just do it. Shut up.
Yep. Yeah. All right, and we move on to Minnesota, where Ilhan Omar kicked ass, man. There's no way to put it. She beat her opponent by a margin of 18 points. Incredible amount of turnout. Man, Dave Weigel showed a graphic that I thought was pretty cool on Twitter. Ilhan Omar got 93,000 votes on her own in her primary victory. And that QAnon candidate in Georgia in a Republican runoff, there was a total of 70,000 votes cast in that runoff, right? And Ilhan Omar in her primary got 93,000 on her own. Like, that's, you know, that's just a little factoid that y'all need to understand. The level of enthusiasm she's able to drum up. I'm just like, this is an incredible victory, man. It's a continuation of some of the stuff we've seen from DSA and Justice Democratic types. You know, of course, Jamal Bowman and the Cory Bushes and all of that stuff. It's just awesome to see, Nando.
Yeah, I mean, it's a continuation of the theme that we talked about last week with Rashida Tlaib, and that the mainstream press was hyping up this race over and over again. It's like, oh my God, Ilhan Omar could lose to this, like, arbitration attorney that no one gives a fuck about. Millions of dollars poured into that race from dark money and AIPAC because they hate Ilhan Omar because she thinks Palestinians are human beings. So, you know, the mainstream press was just following suit and saying that, oh my God, Ilhan Omar fighting for her political life. Same thing with Rashida Tlaib. Same thing with AOC when she ran against Michelle Caruso Cabrera, a Republican Wall Street TV personality. And all three of them absolutely crushed their races. I mean, by like 30 points on average, each of them. So it just goes to show, like, the deck is stacked against them from a media standpoint. But when you are this kind of congressperson that actually does stuff, that is actually visible, that is actually out there kind of advocating for your constituents and the needs of the people and all these things, like, once you get in there, the hardest thing is getting in. But once you're in, they will reward you for that over and over and over again. If you deliver the goods like that for your people, they will reward you over and over again, no matter how hostile the media is. It's just a complete repudiation of the conventional wisdom that you have to be like more moderate when you're in there and all that stuff. Like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib especially are very kind of unapologetic in their leftness, you know, their leftism. Yep. And Omar has just been the subject of all kinds of like heinous, absolutely heinous attacks.
I feel
attacks.
Like of all of, well, no, I don't know. It's got to be a tie between her and AOC. AOC has been so visible. She's turned into a sort of celebrity of sorts. And so the right kind of uses her. She's like a figurehead, or like she's a symbol for something that the right knows that their base is completely against. Just some mouthy broad from the Northeast. We don't need that. We don't like that. And so they've used her as an avatar. That's the word that I was using. Yeah. They've used her as an avatar for, you know, things that they hate. So she's gotten it a lot. Like, she is constantly on Fox News. But Ilhan Omar has been, man, if she gets it from people who ostensibly are supposed to be leftward-leaning, liberal-leaning, she gets it from both sides of the equation, and she gets it pretty tough, too. Yeah. For not backing down from talking about maybe some of the nice things that Castro did for poor people in Cuba. Yeah.
AOC gets it a lot worse from the right, or gets it, but liberals love AOC, you know?
Yes.
Whereas Ilhan Omar obviously gets it from the right, but also from the libs. The libs hate Ilhan Omar. Like, they hate her, you know? So that's like the biggest difference, is that the libs like have been constantly trying to undermine AOC, Ilhan Omar, whereas they kind of like AOC, you know? Like, they like her brand.
She's good at playing the game.
Yeah.
She's very good at playing the game, and we've seen it just throughout the course of her tenure, right? Yeah. When she chooses to like pick in battles, you know, when she chooses to go against the established order in the House, like she's been more strategic. She's been, quite frankly, more political. There's no other way to put it than some of the other members of the squad. Plus, like, you know, she's photogenic, and not to say that Ilhan Omar isn't, because let's face it, she's hot.
Yeah.
But you know, like it's she's been playing the game pretty good. And, you know, again, we try to always bring it full circle here on the show. It's important that these people are winning these races. It's important that they're turning their seats into safe seats while being loud and proud lefties.
Yeah.
It's important that they're doing that because, you know, as Nando just pointed out, like, we need to get them to the place where they become powerful enough in the party where even the annoying neoliberal wing of the party would be like, shit, man, we kind of got to put these people on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they've become celebrities. They've become powerful.
Yeah.
They've become names and faces. Like, we got to start making them a part of stuff. And that's how you achieve power. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, there's no way to get an Ilhan Omar type of person onto Joe Biden's presidential ticket. That's just not freaking happening at the point that we are right now. But, you know, what we have to hope for and push for is that she makes it through the crucible of the dynamics of the Democratic Party. And she comes out the other side, not too much of a whore. and that's not gender specific.
No,
that is literally what happens to you when you go through the machine that is, you know, party politics in this country. Yeah. And so, you know, not everybody comes out of it Bernie, man, like straight up and down, you know, but not everybody spends that much time in, you know, the government or in the House or the Senate and comes out of it as somebody who still has pretty solid moral clarity intact. Yeah. So, you know, that's why these races are important.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's unequivocal good news. I mean, it's one of those things that you hold on to in these kind of dark times, is that there is this kind of crew in the Congress, and, you know, Cory Bush is coming in, and Jamal Bowman's coming in, and Mondaire Jones coming in. It's like basically doubling the size of the quote unquote squad, and diversifying the geography of it. I mean, I still think we need some more Bernie-crats in the Southwest. I mean, there's huge potential there, especially with like Mexican Americans,
the brown people,
who like rallied around Bernie in a way that was really remarkable and very undercovered. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't produced yet candidates that have won House races or and things like that. That seems to be like the next obvious place to build real power in the Congress is in those areas. But yeah, unequivocal good news. I love Ilhan Omar. I'm a big fan. I find her to be a genuinely inspiring person when that's very few and far between. Basically, it's for me, it's her and Bernie are the ones that really do kind of speak to me on a much more visceral level than any other politicians. And if she's listening to the Woke Bros, as I'm sure she is, Ilhan Omar, come on the show. I love you.
Yes, yes. We love you, Ilhan Omar, or Ilhan.
Yeah.
Ilhan.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm going to get that,
pat. She's telling you how to do it, man.
I'm going to get that down pat, and y'all going to be sick of me and these renunciations. Watch. And so, you know, finally, man, we end up over the weekend. I happened to be in Palm Springs. I was in a pool.
Wow, fancy.
I was enjoying some hard seltzers.
Hell yeah.
You know, gazing at the stars when it came over the wire that the president had he'd issued an executive order to basically extend the unemployment insurance benefits that was in the what did they call the CARES Act? Was that the
Yeah, it was the CARES Act. Yeah.
The relief program or whatever, instead and taking it from instead $600 extra as it was to $400 extra. You know. Essentially, you know, decreeing like this is what I would like to see happen for and we can unpack all the reasons why, you know, the Republican president might want that to be the case.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as the days follow, it gets disentangled. Like you can't actually do this. There has to be a couple of processes. And what it ends up being is that from where I sit, Nando, it seems like Donald Trump is sending a message to Mitch McConnell and crew, like, get this shit through ASAP.
Yeah.
We want this through.
Yeah.
The people are going to love it coming from me.
Yeah.
Like, I get to take credit for literally putting money in their pockets. My shit is coming up in November. I want to win again.
Yeah.
Get this through. Stop fucking around. And what you see happening in the Senate, as always with the Republican leadership, they're having a hard time choosing between utter cruelty and humanity. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, what do we do? Sometimes we want to be human, but our ideology dictates that we treat people like shit at every turn. Ah, how do we do it, Nando? it's like, you know, that scene in fucking in Macbeth.
Oh, shit.
Where he's just having this like existential crisis, like he cannot make a decision. He's just
Hamlet.
He's just rife
to be
oh,
or not
Hamlet,
to be.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Not Hamlet. Not Macbeth. Hamlet.
Yeah.
Cut that shit out, Rob.
Yeah.
I can sound smart. Hamlet.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Yeah.
Hamlet, where he's just like the indecision. What do I do?
What?
Do I just murder people and hope that they starve to death? Or do I just let them have $400 extra?
Yeah.
It's not insane.
I don't think it's right that it's the decision between utter cruelty and humanity. It's they want to do utter cruelty all the time. It's just sometimes that being human actually benefits their own self-interest, especially at the polls.
Right.
We talked about it a little last week that there's a split in the Republican Party because I think that they the people who are up for re-election right now desperately want to pass some form of extension on the relief programs because they know that if they throw people off these relief programs, they will lose big in November. I think Mitch McConnell has already written off the election as a loss. I think that's kind of the split between McConnell and Trump is that Trump knows that if he passes like another version of this relief bill, he might have a chance. You know, and if they pass a generous one, like maybe if they expanded the $600 to $800, you know, like he might even win. Like that's the kind of thing that you could win you an election. But I think that they've written him off and they'd rather just do the bidding of their donors and play their cards in the next round, 2022, 2024.
Hold on, Nando. I want to unpack that for a second because I think it's important for people to understand.
Yeah.
The decision that's actually being faced here. When we talk about the donor class and their sphere of influence, it's essentially, if you're not up for election and you're just like, there's no reason for me to upset my donors right now, who, let's face it, they want people to go back to work.
Yes.
For the unlivable wages that they currently pay them at. That's what it's coming down to. It's like, we need these, stop letting these people stay home. We want them coming back to work for $8.50 an hour. What the hell are you idiots doing out there? Like, that makes no sense. These people were perfectly happy working for slave wages. Get them back out there, right? Yeah. But as a politician, how do you not just make the calculation and like, all right, you guys will get over this by the time it's time for me to be reelected, because what are you going to do? You're going to back the Dems?
Yeah.
You know, like it's, I don't understand the calculation being made there.
I mean, the thing is they could lose and back the Dems. I mean, the biggest factor in people's voting is the state of the economy.
No, I don't mean the voting. I'm talking about the donor class. Oh, Mitch McConnell's favorite.
I mean, the donor
ruling class.
Yeah.
People.
I mean, they're not going to back the Dems, but they might back someone else within the Republican Party. I mean, that's just what it is, and it's also deeply ideological as well. I mean, that's what's going on there. I mean, it's been really remarkable because the $600 on the $600 unemployment insurance bonus, which is on top of the existing unemployment insurance, actually was relatively generous for the American context. It's piss poor in the European context, but it's relatively generous in the American context. Tons of workers were actually making more money off of the unemployment insurance than they were in their previous jobs. And there's been there was this Reddit thread that went kind of viral this week of workers talking about their experience receiving the unemployment insurance. And it was just unbelievably moving because you see all these people who've just been living on a knife's edge for years, working bullshit jobs for minimum wage, struggling to scrape by every single week, just stressing out over rent, working their ass off in these utterly demeaning jobs, and just having literally no time to do anything for themselves, anything that makes life worth living, learning how to play
or
an instrument,
put any money away,
some
kind of emergency
I'm
comes up,
about,
I got $200 for
book,
it.
You know, or right. like mm. you know, learning something Jesus, or man. Picking up a hobby, these kind of things, and so a lot of these workers for the first time have had the ability to do something like that. And you're hearing stories of people who are like, man, I finally learned how to cook for myself. I've lost 30 pounds. I feel really healthy for the first time. You know, wow. I feel like I've finally been able to take a breath after 10 years of just working my ass off and stressing about money every single second of every single day. And it's just, it's a window into what even the most mild redistributive policies in America would do. Just the unleashing of human potential, the unleashing of dignity that would go across for millions and millions of people in this country who suffer so many indignities every single day. You know, it's just it's really just a small window. And of course, they're just going to crack that door open a little bit and then slam it right back shut. And make these people work for what you called, I think accurately, slave wages. You know, it's just, it's really.
There's no two ways about it. The data is out there. Wages have stagnated. Nothing else has. Okay. It's still really expensive. Grocery prices have gone up. Rents, forget about it. There's nothing stagnant about rents. That continues to go up. So cost of living increases. Your wages stay exactly the same. And people are expected to live that way. Right. I'm glad you brought up the idea of first of all, I think Donald Trump gets the idea better than a lot of people, just the concept of a transaction. Just I give them $800 a week. I'm going to win.
You will.
I'm going to win.
If he does that, he manages to pull off something like that, he'll win. 100%.
He will win. If he increased the amount of money he was giving people to not go back to these jobs, look, he would win.
His approval rating after he did the Trump bucks, you know, the check with his name, the $1,200 with his name on it, which was like a genius political move. And everyone's like, oh my God, look at him. He's putting a fucking signature.
It's so narcissistic, but he knows, he's savvy in that sense.
You know, he's got like a, I don't know, he's got like a Carnival Barker sensibility to him.
Yes.
And that savvy. And look at his approval rating in the weeks after the $1,200 came out. Shot up, you know, it shot up. Imagine if you just did that over and over again, it would keep shooting up. And that's how politics works. Give people easily understandable things that improve their lives, not Pell Grant relief WOC BIPOC who start a coding business in underserved areas for a minimum of 3.5 years or some bullshit like that. You just give them like, oh, you check.
How does somebody with crippling student debt start a business in the, like, how do you even achieve that? The point of you incurring student debt is that you didn't have cash. That's just the perfect way to end the show though, Nando, what you said. It's like, that's politics, dude. Doing stuff for people in a way that they can clearly understand how it improves their lives. I always talk
about Lyndon Johnson. When he was a first-term congressman, one of the youngest congressmen of all time, in his first term, he busted his ass to bring electricity to his district. His district did not have electricity. Mm. It was people living in very rough conditions in very remote area of Texas. In Texas. And he brought electricity. He ran on that forever, and they rewarded him. Forever. He's like, I brought electricity to the Hill Country. All these women that used to have to, like, you know, break their backs, like washing clothes and cooking, all that stuff, like with like unbelievably harsh conditions, now could just like put it in a washing machine and all that shit. I brought electricity to the Hill Country. Vote for me. That was it. And he won every single race.
That's it. That's what we try to explain on the show. That's what we like when people are just like, oh, you just sat there and you killed such and such. It's just like, bruh, it's not about, you know, this person's a Democrat, so they pass the test. It's not even about, oh, they need to be some pure person. It's like, are you trying to do shit for people or are you not? Like, that's essentially the litmus test here. And, you know, that's what we're going to continue to fight for. Of course, man, make sure you become a Patreon of countthedings.com, man. We know this is rough times. If you can't, we understand. But if you can spare, you know, 2 cups of Starbucks a month to become a patron of countthedings.com, please do so. It helps pay for us to do this outstanding content that we bring to you every single week. Make sure you're checking out Cinephobe. Make sure you're checking out the original Black Opinions Matter show. Growing Up the Same. Trey is getting some outstanding guests on Growing Up the Same. Of course, there's the Friday Mailbag. Wednesday service with Naima Cochran, who, you know, she just wrote up a dope joint on Billboard about the Versus movement that sprung up during quarantine. Just another example of Black creativity here in America. Just make sure you're checking out all of the shows, man. We're going to see you guys next week. Always remember, left is best. Rest in peace to my brother Michael Brooks. Later. We out, man.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.